Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome. Good to have you all with us here today. Welcome back to the Mark Steiner Show. We're about to start our new conversation, reminding you that you listen to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA FM, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And support for WEAA is provided by Luna. Information on flooring available at luna.com/traffic or at 877-241-LUNA. And support for the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MeetCube, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeetCube, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeetCube invests in you. And remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com, or you can log on to the Mark Steiner Show and click on MeetCube, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. In about a half an hour, we're going to be talking with Carla Kaplan, who wrote the book, Miss Anne in Harlem, The White Women of the Black Renaissance. But first, we are going to take a look at what's happening on our HBCU campuses. We all heard the story of Brian Stewart, a former White House intern who wanted to become a member of Kappa Alpha Psi because his childhood pastor and mentor had been part of that organization. He received a rejection letter the day after his interview from Alpha Iota, Morgan State University's chapter of Kappa Alpha Psi. He says because he was gay, the university is investigating. And we are here with Sultan Shakir, who is Director of Youth and Campus Outreach at the Human Rights Campaign and Vice President of Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Community Center of Baltimore and Central Maryland, and Samantha Master, senior at Morgan State University, where she's a communications major, served as the Community Service and Outreach Coordinator of the school's Gay Straight Alliance, Rainbow Soul, from 2008 to 2010, and Youth and Campus Engagement Assistant at the Human Rights Campaign. And Samantha and Sultan, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
Thank you for having us.
Good to have you, Samantha. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. Good to have you both with us. So let's talk about this. I mean, one of the things that, and folks, you can join us here, by the way, at 410-319-8888. Clearly, a lot of the Greek organizations that do not want to talk at this moment, but we're looking forward to creating a dialogue with everybody around this issue here on campus. The university is not saying anything because it's in the middle of its investigation, but you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log onto our Facebook page. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. So, Samantha, you're a student here. You've been in the midst of this and building bridges on this campus. Talk to me about your perception of what's really going on here.
So I think that Mr. Stewart's experience speaks to the experience that I think several students who've wanted to pledge have had when it comes to standing at the intersection of a Black identity and an LGBT identity. Students have definitely felt excluded from being able to pledge openly and have felt as if, you know, they may face some repercussion for being out and wanting to join an organization.
But how does that manifest itself?
So in a lot of ways, it manifests in students deciding that they're not going to participate in LGBT, any really activities that could be perceived as LGBT until they rush or until they cross. It manifests in students really wanting to pledge and simply not going through with that process, feeling like they have a lot to offer these organizations, and simply not going through that process because they know that there's stigma around being LGBT. And oftentimes it manifests in students changing what they feel is their gender expression or sexual orientation and not being out with that just to not have to go through that.
Well, Sultan, one of the things that I found out this morning was that there are 106 HBCUs in the United States of America. Only 21% have active LGBT-specific groups. Only three colleges have gender identity expression in their non-discrimination statements. And we're in a world where the public opinion is fast-changing around issues like gay marriage and about the acceptance of people in our society who are gay and lesbian, transgender. Is there something in the HBCUs that's different than other universities that makes this more difficult?
So, I mean, to your point about the American population, changing quickly. It is changing quickly, but it's not changing quickly enough. And one thing that we're seeing that helps that change is dialogue and people being out on campus. And like Samantha talked about, we're seeing a lot of students on HBCUs and really on a lot of campuses around the country, and it's not just HBCUs, that don't feel comfortable coming out because they're fearing facing discrimination. So what we're seeing is in places where students feel comfortable, they feel supported by the administration, they're coming out, the institutions are moving forward, the student organizations are moving forward, but where they don't see support from faculty, from staff, from administration, they're tending to be much more closeted in their day-to-day lives and in their interactions with other organizations. So I don't think it's necessarily anything that's confined to HBCUs, but it's something that where we see strong support and also see strong LGBT groups that are active, that are out, that are letting other students on campus know who they are as people, that those institutions are moving forward in terms of their support for LGBT equality.
So let me just ask you both a frank question. So are we making much ado about nothing when it comes to, or is there something really concrete here about Black Greek-led organizations, BGLOs as they're known by their acronym, and accepting in gay and lesbian members? Is that, I mean, how rife is that? Is this an incident that's isolated, or is there something deeper going on here, Sultan?
Well, I don't think it's an isolated incident, but I also don't want to make it sound like it's just a problem that HBCUs have.
Right.
And other
Exactly. That's one of the reasons I'm raising it. Right.
Right. I mean, we also see a number of other institutions that are grouped together also looking at how they can move their institutions forward when it comes to LGBT equality. A lot of religious-based institutions, like Catholic institutions, are also having the same conversation. Some institutions have started gay-straight alliances, like the University of Notre Dame, but other universities, like Catholic University, are still pushing back on their student populations when it comes to accepting them in organized groups on campus.
What do you mean they're pushing back?
So there are a number of institutions around the country where students are interested in organizing gay-straight alliances, but are not allowed to by their campus administration.
So that's actively happening on some campuses?
In
Catholic university campuses?
Yes.
So, but you're not finding that at HBCUs. People aren't pushing back. They're just not being formed, right?
Well, there's a mix of both. I mean, pushing back can be overt, as in, no, you are not allowed to start a gay-straight alliance, or it can be much more subtle, in terms of funding, or I'm sorry, now is not the right time to form this group. We have, you know, X number of groups that are forming. The university is going to focus on that. So whether it's just a blatant pushback or a much more subtle pushback, we are seeing some universities not be as accepting and as supportive of LGBT students as they should be. And that's one of the reasons why every year HRC puts on the HBCU Leadership and Career Summit to bring students together, to put them in spaces where they feel supported, accepted, and developed as leaders, and provide them with tools and resources to go back to their campus and develop allies on campus, whether that's the Student Government Association, whether that's one of the Black student groups on campus, whether that's finding an out teacher on campus who can help them work with the administration. There are definitely ways to move campuses forward, but a lot of it has to do with students being out, being comfortable to be out, and building alliances with other faculty, students, and staff on campus.
So one of the things that there was apparently a report, a scholarly essay called "Not on My Line: Attitudes About Homosexuality in Black Fraternities," that members surveyed repeatedly stated that gay men applying for membership were not the type of potential fraternity brothers they wanted on their campus. If those allegations are true here, that in some measures confirms that essay, but maybe it doesn't. I mean, and I'm saying that because, you know, people who have been in the closet and not openly gay or lesbian have been members of frats and sororities since the beginning.
That's right. And that's part of why it's so important for people to come out in their lives, I mean, whether it's in a fraternity or whether it's in the workplace. Because there are gay and lesbian people who are making very, very significant contributions to these organizations today and have for years since these organizations were founded. And I think it's important for other individuals in these fraternities to realize that, but that only happens when people come out and express who they are and fully who they are as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender active members of these fraternities and these institutions.
And if I can add to that,
please.
I think it's important that we recognize that BGLOs were founded in an inherent critique of white mainstream power structures, right? And so the fact that these organizations are using their power to exclude members of their community, organizations that were founded and really a Black solidarity movement of moving forward equality and justice and access, are then using those newly acquired positions of relative power to exclude members of Black communities, I think that we have to have a conversation about the hypocrisy and the damage and pain that we are inflicting upon our own communities when these types of actions occur. And I don't think that critique has been articulated within these organizations as it should be.
Well, what kind of conversation is being created around this on campus here? I mean, is it beginning opening a dialogue, or is the Greek world talking to the Alliance and other people? Is there a dialogue being created on campus? What's happening here?
So I will say that Mr. Morgan Manzona Whaley has organized a Channel Orange and Blue town hall for tomorrow at 5:30 in the University Student Center. So the conversation is certainly happening. I think it's important that the president of Morgan, Dr. David Wilson, has been very intentional in creating an LGBT advisory committee comprised of students, faculty, and staff. That looks at LGBT inclusion at the university level as a whole. And, of course, there's Rainbow Soul, the LGBT organization at Morgan, which has been having these conversations and will continue to have these conversations. And I also know that the Sigma Gamma Rho usually does an annual, True Life, I'm Gay at an HBCU, and they do various conversations. So these conversations are absolutely happening with more frequency than I think folks realize.
So, but the major Greek organizations are not talking at this moment here on campus or elsewhere. So are they part of this dialogue?
In the past, they have been. Prior to this incident, when these conversations have come up, there have been BGLO members who have either spearheaded these conversations, have had intentional voices at these conversations, or have been a part of these conversions.
So now, because the incidents that take place, as you say, outside of HBCU worlds, it just happened to pop up here on this program today because of what happened here on Morgan State University's campus. But there was an incident that just happened at Baylor University, with a student senate body passed a resolution against discriminating against gay and lesbian people on campus that was vetoed by the student senate president, and that is again a large Christian university. He said his comment was, simply because the university disagrees with your actions or lifestyle doesn't imply that it's seeking to attack you. So said the young man, Wesley Hodges, the student body president. So I think that's important, Sultan, because it goes beyond any one campus.
Right. And that's why we're definitely working to create dialogue not only on HBCU campuses, but in spaces across the country where students are facing this type of pushback and discrimination, not only from institutions like fraternities and sororities, but also student governments and from the administration. And that's why there's not just one thing that can happen on a campus that makes it LGBT friendly. I mean, even if we do deal with fraternities and sororities and they become welcoming and inclusive and acceptive, there's still other things that need to happen on campuses to make student life safe for LGBT students.
Folks, number here is 410-319-8888. Whether you're a student on this campus or university, or a professor on this campus, associate with this campus or not, or any other campus in Baltimore, we'd love to hear your thoughts on all of this. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook page, tweet us at Mark Steiner. I'll be checking the Facebook pages now to see if people are commenting on this issue there. 410-319-8888. And Michael, you're on the air.
Yes, Mark, my question has to do with intolerance and stigmatization of those who are members of the faith community and who are on campus. And as much as the likelihood is that the more that the sodomy lobby permits its people to come out of the closet, those who are opposed to that, the people of faith, will be put into the closet. Those who would like to be part of fraternities who wear yarmulkes because they're Jewish and they're out, so to speak, and their religious beliefs, we looked at as a hate group. What this means is, instead of inclusivity for all, it means exclusivity of those who have always been the bedrock of this culture and this country and civilization, those who know that this particular behavior, LGBT, is an absolute stab in the heart and every advance that it takes of the Bible-believing community. So my question to the guests is, what would you do to make sure that true inclusivity keeps coming, that the Bible is not called a hate book, that those of us who oppose you
Let me interrupt you. First, most people I know in the gay and lesbian community do not call the Bible a hate book. That's a total mythology. And if anybody's spewing hate at the moment, with all due respect, I have to say it's you. And people can disagree about gay rights and have their argument in society in an open way, but the way you're describing it, I think is the kind of thing that kind of pushes that hatred to another level, because most people I know who are gay and lesbian are deeply religious people. Not everybody, but many are. Do either one of you want to comment before we go back to the phones?
Well, I'll just say that, I mean, we do believe that there needs to be dialogue with everybody, and everybody is allowed to have their beliefs, and nothing about LGBT inclusivity does anything to push anybody out of the conversation. I mean, we are actively involved in conversations with Catholic universities, with HBCUs, with institutions that are secular about how to include LGBT people in the dialogue, and nowhere in that conversation do we ask to exclude religious people from the dialogue. We're actually interested in including them in that dialogue.
Let's go to the phones again, 410-319-8888. Gary in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, I used to be one of the most homophobic people in the world. And as I have progressed to the age of 60, born and raised here in Baltimore, Maryland, I am one of the most pro-LGBTQ folks in the world, I would like to say. And basically, just like I told your greeter on the phone, it's always the right time to do the right thing. And we all have folks in our families and our circles of friends and our workplace folks that are gay and lesbian. And if you want rights for yourself, you should want those same rights for others. And I'll take your comments off the air.
Thank you so much. Samantha?
Yes. I mean, one of the things that I'm very heartened by in this conversation is a recognition that the university is supposed to be a safe space for all of its students. And so this conversation is not we're not debating the merits of human sexuality. We are recognizing that the university is supposed to protect all of its students and should hold all of the organizations that are chartered under the university to the same standard of safety and protection. And I think it's important that we have this conversation, especially as a Black community, from a historical standpoint. So we can't talk about LGBT people without talking about the Harlem Renaissance, right? And Claude McKay and County Cullen and Zora Neale Hurston and Langston Hughes. We can't have it without talking about the Black Arts Movement and talking about Audre Lorde and June Jordan and Pat Parker. We can't have it without talking about contemporary Black life. And so there is a space and has always been a space for Black LGBT people, and I think that it's, one, the university's responsibility to make sure that history is known and affirmed, but also to make sure the bodies that are present in the university are also safe and affirmed.
Let me go back to the phones here, and just an email came in from Claudia just to note that the Channel Orange and Blue Forum that you, Samantha, spoke about will be scheduled for 7 p.m. tomorrow evening. So that was just a note coming in. We'll read that. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Eric, you're on the air.
Yes. Good morning to
good morning,
you,
Eric.
Mr. Stein, and everybody on the panel. Just two quick comments. One, since this dialogue has been taking place about people coming out concerning their sexual orientation, why is it's such a big deal about somebody's sexual orientation? Like, that, whatever you do, like, that's your business. And it's like, this conversation has been going on, has gotten so deep that it's being compared to what Black people went through in history. I'm not just talking about in America, because when you talk about our issues and our problems, this started with the transatlantic slave trade. You can't compare. I don't think you should compare somebody not being like, or even being attacked because of their sexual orientation, comparing that to what we went through in the transatlantic slave trade. I'm actually offended when those two things are compared, because we're trying to throw all this stuff in the same bag together, and it's not, that's not right. And especially not fair to what Black people as a whole went through as far as transatlantic slave trade is concerned. But somebody's sexual orientation, if somebody comes out or doesn't come out, that's really none of my business. Like, I don't have to walk around telling everybody what my sexual orientation is or what I like to do sexually. That's personal.
All right, but let me let Sultan respond. Sultan?
People do ask a lot why it's important for LGBT people to come out. And it really comes down to the fact that when you know somebody who's LGBT, whether it's your coworker, whether it's a brother and sister, whether it's one of your children or somebody in your church, you really start to understand that person as a human being and not just as, you know, something that we're discussing on the radio. But when you really start to understand LGBT people as human beings and as your family members and as somebody in your congregation, you start to really realize that really what LGBT people are looking for is just the same basic ability to be accepted in their day-to-day lives as everybody else. And so that's why it's so important to any dialogue, whether it's a dialogue in a fraternity about whether or not we accept LGBT people, or a dialogue in a church about whether or not we accept LGBT people, for LGBT people to be visible in that dialogue. And that's why it's so important for people to come out when they're comfortable and in spaces where they're supported.
Samantha, go ahead.
I think it's important to also link, as this gentleman said, about the comparisons, though no one has made that comparison on this show,
right.
I think it's important that we link the erasure of black LGBT people to a history of Western colonialism and imperialism that started with the transatlantic slave trade, right? And so if we look at indigenous communities and the ways in which sexuality is fluid, there was a recent article in the Huffington Post, I think that came out yesterday, that talked about the four genders of the Navajo tribe, right? That there's much scholarship that's been done to talk about gender and sexual fluidity as it relates to the continent of Africa pre-colonialism. And so if we start looking at our community historically and holistically, then we can link the erasure and the demonization of LGBT people to a history of imperialism and colonialism that is very much present through that is present through the African American experience.
And you raise issues, I think, Samantha, that have been hotly debated, and I think that are really important to kind of explore even in a little deeper sense. And maybe we can just create a panel of different people at some point in the next month or so, in the coming weeks. To kind of take off what you just said. I think that it deserves a really in-depth look historically about who we are as a people, because the question does rise all the time about, I think, comparing the two, and that also kind of derail the discussion as well. So I think what you've raised here is a critical piece, both of you have. And so it's tomorrow night. Tell people where to go for the meeting again, Samantha.
So it's going to be in the University Student Center at 7 p.m., as Ms. Light rightly corrected me.
At the Student Center at 7 p.m.?
Yes.
And all are welcome?
All are welcome. It's a community forum and conversation.
And so I want to thank Samantha Master once again for being on our show. She's a senior here at Morgan State University, communications major, who was a leader of the Gay Straight Alliance Rainbow Soul here from 2008 to 2010. And Sultan Shakir, who is Director of Youth and Campus Outreach at the Human Rights Campaign. Sultan and Samantha, thank you both so much for taking your time this morning.
Thank you for having this conversation.
And we're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a very interesting book, Miss Anne in Harlem. It's catching, it's becoming, people are reading it across the country. And the author is coming to Baltimore. She's our next guest. Stay with us.